There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio live from the Sioux at the Michigan State Paracon. Michigan State? Is this the college suddenly?
No.
From the Michigan Paracon in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, this is Beyond the Darkness. And I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Tim, we have enjoyed many a Margarita Monday.
Oh, yes.
On the show. Yeah. Cinco de Ninos, as they've become known.
Right.
Well, tonight we're beginning a whole new thing. We're calling it Cana Coladas, Tim.
Cana Coladas.
As we do live shows from these different conferences and continue to drink during the entire program.
Oh, yeah.
Behind us, you hear Scaryoki, and yes, that is Achy Breaky Heart,
just to kick
the night off. Joining us also on the microphone, Mr. Jeff Belanger.
Hey.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
I'm great. Great to be with you guys and doing this here at the Sioux.
For those of you that don't know who Jeff Belanger is, you probably never will, so we won't even bother getting into that. Actually, right. Jeff.
That was great.
Jeff is a prolific author in the paranormal. He has written over a dozen books on all aspects of the paranormal. He's also the host of Our New England Legends podcast.
Podcast and TV show.
And TV show on
Amazon
PBS
Prime
and Amazon Prime. He is the lead writer and has been since episode one of Ghost Adventures.
Uh-huh.
And he lost a bet, so he's here with us this evening.
Yeah, yep. I'm paying off my gambling debts at the casino here to do this charity work, to be with you guys.
Well, we've got supernatural news, and then we're going to roll into some live parish here. We've got twos of people waiting to tell their story. So we're going to do that in
a bit. Let's count them again. One, two. Yep.
Twos of people. All right. So let's get started in the world of supernatural news as we go now to the supernatural news desk with Mr. Billy Ray Dennis.
Woo!
Uh-huh. Give us some achy breaky news.
You did.
What's our story, Tim? What's our kickoff story?
We go to Helena, Montana, boys, where a lighthearted campaign aimed at getting people to spend more time in the picturesque parks of Montana, and there are plenty of them, took a sour turn when a Sasquatch display that had been one of the centerpieces was stolen. It turns out that the campaign to take a selfie with Sasquatch has gone terribly awry.
Terribly wrong?
According to a local news report, the comical cardboard cutout has been placed along with a trail in the city of Helena by their parks department earlier this summer, and now is gone. The idea was to inspire people to get out into nature and find the faux Bigfoot for selfies to share on social media.
Now it's in somebody's closet, looking shame-filled
and smelling of Dracar.
Ooh.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the concept may have actually been too successful. As it not only attracted ambitious residents in search of the Sasquatch spot, but also some of the ne'er-do-wells who wanted to do more than just take a photo with it. I'm not even going to speculate at this point. At some point earlier in the week, a miscreant made off with the Bigfoot, leaving behind only some broken bindings. Which...
And a ball gag, I've been told.
Oh, poor Sasquatch. Which had been used to secure the cutout. The theft was particularly disappointing to the Parks Department director, Amy Teagarden, who had initially worried about such a scenario unfolding earlier in the summer, but grew less concerned as her fellow Helenians left the display undisturbed in the wilderness for weeks. So he did have a bit of a reprieve. He enjoyed the great outdoors. He got the pine scent and then the smell of some sort of chloroform.
Dave, imagine like if you were ever to go out in the woods with me and like we found...
You lost me already.
But just pretend.
Okay.
Like, and there's Sasquatch and we're there to take selfies.
Right.
I mean, my imagination is already like...
Yes.
Like none of them could be posted.
None of them.
Zero. Like we'd just be like, oh, that's really funny, but we couldn't show that to
anyone. Yeah, that would be...
Yeah. It would have backfired even if it served its purpose.
Exactly. And I'm wondering if that's kind of what happened. Somebody's got it, and it's in their home.
Used for evil, I'm sure.
Yes, in a shower trying to scrub its cardboard self clean.
Right.
All right, where are we off to now?
Well, we still have a little bit more here, Dave.
No, do we?
Easy, easy.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm 2.5 Bloody Marys in as Jeff is sipping on his liquid marijuana. That's the name of his drink.
It tastes an awful lot like roofies and watermelon.
Do you like roofie coladas?
It's an unnatural color of teal, green, and like almost yellow.
Mm. Like the tears of a cardboard Sasquatch. All right, Tim, what's the rest of this story?
Sadly, that sense of relief that Ms. Teagarden had was shattered after the Bigfoot vanished. You know, it spoiled some of the fun, she lamented. I'm hoping that whoever decided... This is an ironic song in the background, At Last. I'm hoping that somewhere, at last, Bigfoot is finding that love he deserved. I'm hoping that whoever decided...
My love has come around.
I'm hoping that whoever decided they needed to take Sasquatch will return him no questions asked.
Oh, I have plenty of questions.
Where to begin?
While Teagarden waits to see if the culprit comes clean or came at all, or at least leaves the cutout at a location where it can be recovered, police in Helena are on the lookout for the lost display. And fortunately for residents still hoping to hunt the creature before the end of the summer, there's a second, presumably now quite lonely Sasquatch at another location in the city.
Aw. Solo Squatch is out there all by himself?
he is roaming solo.
All right, where are we off to next?
So to speak. Well, there's a mysterious blood-sucking creature slain.
He's not mysterious, and his
name
is
right here.
Blanchard.
I'm right here. I can hear you.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And he's slain, he or she has slain a slew of sheep in the Ukraine.
Wow, new tongue twister. Well, say that part again real quick for me.
Slain a slew of sheep, Sir Sasquatch, in the Ukraine. A whopping 8 sheep on a farm in the Ukraine were slain in one night. Wow.
My record's 6.
Really?
Yeah.
They were just sore. They weren't quite slain.
Right.
In one night, in a yet-to-be-identified predator that downed the unfortunate animals by draining their blood, the bizarre incident reportedly took place earlier this week in the village of, oh my God, I think this is...
The village of, oh my God?
Well, it's as close as I'm going to get to
the name.
Do you
want me to cough over it while you say it?
Yes, if you
would. Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1.
Yeti-Nahu or something, I am.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah. And has left residents as well as experts in the area baffled. The gruesome scene was first discovered by farmer Mikhail Ostapyuk.
Need me to cough again?
That's his name.
It's Ostapyuk to you, my friend.
I nailed that one, and that's what she said. Who stumbled upon the dead sheep when he got up in the morning and went to tend to the flock, which had been perfectly fine the previous night. At least that's what he'd like you to think.
Is this like the chupacabra making the leap over the Atlantic?
I think so, yeah.
Mm.
An examination of the animals indicated that they were killed in succession by something that was in serious need of sustenance and found it in a rather strange form. According to a veterinarian investigating the case, the sheep had all of the blood drained from their bodies to the point that even their hearts were found to be bone dry. There is nothing in the heart. The heart is empty, marveled...
Like my ex-wife?
Hey-o!
Hey! Where is she this time of night? Marveled Maria Andrichuk.
Same corner I found her on.
liquor is a wonderful thing. Who had seemingly never seen such a thing in her 40 years as working as a vet. The nature of the animal's demise had also left local residents...
Boris, I have never seen this before.
It's head scratcher for me.
He said scratcher, yeah.
Scratcher, I hardly know her. The nature of the animal's demise has also left local residents rattled as the creature also sought the blood of the sheep and opted to leave behind the rest of the remains. This is your ex-wife, isn't it?
Yes.
My God.
Nobody questioned the duck with the blood on his bill, though, did they?
No. This is...
Why they all stuck in fence?
This is particularly perplexing. Because what initially appears to be the obvious culprit, I have no idea. They're saying some kind of
obvious.
The old obvious.
Who wrote this?
It's obvious culprit. We know.
His name is Boris.
We are putting up walls soon. Keep Mexican goat bloodsucker out of country.
They're saying some kind of canine...
Make Kazakhstan great again. I think we're in the Ukraine.
This is, they're saying some sort of canine-like wild dog or wolf, probably from Poland.
Obviously.
I think they're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Obviously.
A Polish dog.
Yeah, blame it on the Poles.
The
yeah, yeah. Would be...
I'm sorry, everybody.
Would be...
I was so hungry.
Would be expected to feast on the flesh of its prey. As such, no one is quite sure what could have killed the sheep, and at this point, they're probably just hoping it won't come back. It should come as no surprise to paranormal enthusiasts that the unsettling cases conjured concerns that the sheep could have been killed by chupacabra. Chupacabra, which is...
Chaka Khan's chupacabra.
Yes, it is Chaka Khan's. She owns a whole
chupacabra.
Flock.
Chupacabra.
which is infamous for its thirst for blood. However,
I spoiled the story, didn't I?
You
earlier.
Did,
oh,
yeah.
Man,
way to
I'm
go.
Sorry,
yeah,
geez.
You're that guy in the theater.
I'm that guy.
Yeah.
Don't go in there.
However, at least one village dismissed this theory out of hand with some fantastic wisdom, which was news to us, it says. Not to us, per se, but the guys in the article.
No, Captain Obvious, who wrote it.
Yeah. It cannot be, they said, because the chupacabra does not attack sheep.
No, goats, of course. Yeah,
well,
duh.
Duh. Yeah.
Duh.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe he's a nearsighted chupacabra.
It's fuzzy and not putting up much of a fight.
And I'll the old
hey,
expert...
Come here, sheep. Come here, goat. What are you? I can't tell. Ah, damn it, it's too late, but I've drank his blood.
Maybe the sheep was just shorn?
Yes.
Oh.
Ooh, a shorn sheep
a
they
shorn
slew.
A shorn sheep. Yeah. Shorn.
Huh? I need yeah. more beer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you think Boris said, don't know why everybody says sheepskin condoms are comfortable. The four sticks I tried did not work so good.
They're also saying that the chupacabra kills rabbits. I think now they're just casting aspersions on the chupacabra.
Yeah, right.
I think
just
they're giving the chupacabra
like, why
a bad
would it,
name.
Why would an
Where
animal,
was he when the Titanic went down? Chupacabra.
That's right. Chupacabra.
Why would an animal just be specific to, like, my prey is specifically goats?
Like
nothing
a vegan,
else.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I simply eat.
Just
lettuce.
Goats. Just, yeah. oh, sheep. Yeah. Same size, same everything. No, I'm going goat or nothing.
Right.
Hey, we're going over to the Belanger's house for dinner.
Yeah, man, let's get some.
They're having rabbit? We don't do that. We only eat goats. You know this. Night at the Chupacabras.
I All love right. that Marx Brothers film, by the way. It's very good.
Where are we up to next?
We're going to Australia, boys. Where they are...
Dun, 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 dun,
no,
dun,
that's
no?
France.
Oh.
Yeah. An Australian woman has reported a frightening yowie encounter.
Yowie.
Yowie. Boy. An Australian woman claims to have led or had a terrifying encounter with the Bigfoot of Down Under, if you know what I mean, called the Yowie.
I saw that
she
movie.
She had a Bigfoot Down Under. It is a Yowie.
Yeah, well,
it's more than a Yowie.
There's
that's
only so
wowie.
Much room.
That's an owie.
That's a I All won't right. sit down again.
No, stop it.
The harrowing experience reportedly occurred back in March, but was picked up by Australian media this week. According to the unnamed woman, and there's a reason she's unnamed, she was driving along a barren dirt road in the middle of the night when she made an impromptu pit stop near a large clearing. I can't imagine why.
She had to pee.
Well, yeah. After a few moments outside of her car, the woman heard something rustling in the brush around her, and so she let out a howl to see if it might be a dog. Is that advisable?
Wait, let out a howl to see if it might be a what?
See if it might be a dog.
Oh, I thought you said duck. I'm
no.
Like, what kind of ducks do
it's
they
It's a Ukrainian
there?
Duck that kills sheep.
So an Australian woman, right. howl, you know, huddled in the bush,
right.
thinks it might be a duck and goes, ow!
Okay,
ow, ay. I can't do an Australian.
Crikey.
Crikey. Might be a duck.
Eh?
That's
a
Canadian.
Right, Canadian Australian.
Yeah.
Who's
right.
howling for a duck. The creature responded with a similar noise. Ow, I. I don't know. Followed by a growl and some grunting. Sounds like there's a lot going on in the brush. Sensing that danger may be afoot, the quick thinking woman pulled out a cricket bat. Everyone in Australia
they,
has
they
one.
All have them, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That she had presumably brought with her for just such a scenario.
You know, I'm going to go take a pee in the bushes. I better bring the cricket bat just in case.
She then knocked on a nearby tree as a way of warning whatever the mysterious noisemaker was that she had a weapon. Why not just...
A dingo ate my baby!
why not just pee indoors?
Right.
To her surprise, she heard the sound repeated out in the darkness because the dingo had a bat.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Which led to a brief exchange of knocks between the woman and the unseen thing. By this point, she was thoroughly fed up with the situation, of course. Not going to run. So she began howling and screaming to scare the interloper away. Would you be squatting and knocking rather than just getting the hell out of there?
Squatting and knocking? That's, no. First of all, it's outdoors, so no. And second of all, everything in Australia wants to kill you.
Right, yeah. That's when everything went pear-shaped, she said, as suddenly she could hear something very large rumbling down a hill towards her.
The crazy train?
Yes, yeah.
All aboard.
That is such weird
timing, yeah,
kismet.
Timing,
yeah. Wow. It is. That's crazy train.
I know. Not the way they're singing it, but
no,
it is
no.
Crazy train.
It's more like, ay, ay, ay.
Thank you, Popeye.
I am what I am.
I am what I am. What have I got myself into? She recalled thinking and noted that I had really bad vibes from this thing.
I'll bet.
She was in an awkward squat. She smartly made a mad dash for her car and made it to the safety, or to it safely, safely made it to her vehicle when she turned on the high beams and was stunned by what she saw. It was a 7 to 8 foot tall, hairy, bipedal beast with eyes that looked to be about the size of golf balls. Perhaps most off-putting about the creature was that it smelt like a 5-week-old roadkill.
And he was just wondering if she could spare a square.
And there you go. That's the end of that story.
All right, Tim, where are we going to go next in the world of supernatural news?
Maybe that guy over your shoulder. That
there is someone over your shoulder.
Yeah.
It is the godfather of the paranormal, John Zappas.
Yeah, it looks just like
him. Hanging out with us here.
Yeah.
I think it's John Zappas.
I think he's going to put his tongue in your ear. I'm not sure.
If he doesn't say anything, no one will know.
Yeah, I know, right? You're going to think I'm hallucinating.
He's so
threatened. All right, Tim, where are we going next in the world of supernatural news?
Well, kids, we're talking about an alien abductee who's running for Congress and has now gotten a big endorsement.
Got my vote. That's two.
And Dave, you voting?
I'm in.
All right, so that's three.
Yep.
A self-described alien abductee who's running for a U.S. House of Representatives seat in Florida has picked up a pretty big endorsement from a major newspaper. Bettina Rodriguez.
The Weekly World News.
Yes, Weekly World. Their National Enquirer is in.
Yeah.
Bettina Rodriguez Aguilera found herself in the spotlight of the national media late last year when it was revealed that she had given a pair of interviews back in 2009 in which she vividly detailed her experiences interacting with ETs. Despite being subjected with a fair amount of ridicule from her claims, Aguilera stayed in the race for Florida's 27th District House seat and recently received some strong support with the GOP primary election less than a week away.
The GOP?
Yeah, you know me. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that hip in the GOP, but we could give it a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, now you can address your emails to tim@darknessradio.com. Of course, include a funky beat with it if you can find it. Was that a burn?
That was a little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Ironically, the very newspaper that broke the story about Aguilera's abduction tale, the Miami Herald, has now actually endorsed the candidate as a Republican pick in next week's election. In an article explaining their choice, editors addressed the proverbial alien in the room head-on by noting that the politician had previously told the newspaper that she believes in extraterrestrials. It went on to share some of the highlights of her story, such as purported abduction at the age of 7 and an alleged lifetime of communications with the ETs. However, the Herald largely dismissed the issue with a terse, there you have it, and an expressed agreement that Aguilera and her experiences are a non-issue. Instead, the newspaper lauded her working-class agenda and cited a number of civic matters, like improving the student loan system and programs to help curb homelessness, which the politician has championed during the campaign. Whether the Herald's backing will help Aguilera remains to be seen, as a poll conducted in late June saw the candidate in fourth place with a mere 6.4 percentage points.
I like the fact that her position on Earthlings First.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because let's face it, Earth First.
I was a little leery about that build that wall around the Earth. But I believe that's done.
I think that's a force field.
Too controversial. Where are we off to next?
Well, let's see. I got to get through these pages of ads. Pages and pages of ads, kids. And why
erectile dysfunction and anal loop. Tim, what kind of ads are you looking at?
Well, Dave, I'm curious. I'm getting older. I'm going through a midlife crisis, and evidently I'm also
midlife.
Getting,
how long are you planning to live, son?
135 years.
Good deal.
A schoolgirl's Nessie photo has been hailed as the best in years, guys.
Really?
Evidently, we got nude shots of Nessie.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Out. Yeah. Were they like selfies or?
Yes. Yeah, and evidently.
Nessie's Twitter account.
This one, Nessie's a little wet, Jeff.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
does this loch make my ass look big?
Yeah, it's kind of controversial.
Ahoy, lassie.
A young girl's remarkable image of an odd anomaly at Loch Ness has been hailed as by one researcher as the...
Which one?
They remain nameless, yes. Jeff. Yeah.
This guy on the side of the road, that's a doozy.
That is a great, great photo.
My name's Connor McLeod. What question do you have?
You nailed it.
As the best Nessie photo in years, according to a report out of Scotland.
Aye, that's the best Nessie photograph I've seen in years. But I'm drunk and blind in one eye.
Charlotte Robinson.
My nephew took a better one.
Charlotte Robinson captured the intriguing picture while vacationing with her family at a popular tourist location last weekend. Early in the evening on Friday, Charlotte was looking out at the loch and, to her amazement, spotted something quite strange. Around 50 feet from the shore, she said, a dark oddity had suddenly emerged out of the water. This mysterious denizen of the lochs.
Did they time this song, Rock Lobster, while you're singing?
Yeah, I think
they
do. I
thought it was Ghostbuster. Yeah. Oh, Rock Lobster?
I thought it was Rock Lobster. I can't tell
Rock
from here.
Hudson.
Rock Hudson. Lock.
Loch
Monster.
Yeah, Loch Lobster, huh?
Loch Monster.
Loch Monster. So this mysterious denizen of the loch seemed to sport a neck and head that was in the shape of a hook. Fortunately, the stunned youngster had the wherewithal to grab her cell phone and snap a picture of the strange scene before the potential creature went back underwater. The encounter continued about a minute later when the monster appeared again, a short distance away from where Charlotte had initially seen it. While her mother was skeptical when told by Charlotte that she had taken a picture of Nessie, her opinion quickly changed upon seeing the intriguing image. I couldn't believe it, she marveled. Something's there. The astonished mom was not the only one impressed by the image, as veteran Nessie hunter Steve Feltham damn near killed him, also raved about the photo. I'm totally excited about this photo, he gushed. It is the best of Nessie in years.
I'm going to show you this photo, but don't swipe right or left. just leave it.
At the risk of...
Whoa!
Wow, that's not Nessie. At the risk of raining on Charlotte's parade, it bears mentioning that nearly 2 years ago, another potential Nessie image was heralded as the best ever, in quotes. Setting up a fine debate for fans of the famous cryptid.
I hope there's a dance-off to prove which one's better.
Regardless of whether or not her photo is truly tops, this youngster's encounter is noteworthy for another reason, as she is now the third schoolgirl to spot something odd at Loch Ness this year.
Oh, man.
That's a loaded statement.
Yeah. Fat guy doing a backstroke. You see the humps in the water, Mom? Hey, that's not humps. That's just your Uncle Bernard.
Why this particular demographic has had such luck at this location is anyone's guess. We're of course talking about the schoolgirl, but it may be because adults visiting the site are simply so skeptical of the creature that they don't even bother to look for it. There you go.
Now, wait a minute. Do you have the pictures that go with this story?
I do not.
Okay, because here's the deal. All right, I don't mean to rain on people's parade.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting picture. You see the water and you see this dark thing kind of popping up out of it. However, in another picture they took of her standing in front of the loch, behind her you see some ducks in the water.
Sometimes it's a matter of perspective, isn't it?
Exactly. So if she took a shot of just the duck from a distance, it looks like, and if especially if they're doing that dunk their head underwater thing, you know, calling the other ducks around the area, they're open for business, if you know what I mean. Yeah. I think that's what she got a picture of. But I don't want to rain on her parade because I said it's the best damn picture I've ever seen.
We don't get many good pictures. They kind of suck.
They kind of suck. What are we off to next
slot? I think they've got my story list in there. The next one's about a man accused of faking a message from a ghost to win back his ex-fiance.
Who hasn't done that? I mean, really, we've all been there.
Wait. Listen how twisted this story is.
Okay.
A man in England is accused of concocting a rather dastardly scheme to win back his former fiancée by hoaxing a ghostly message from his dead, or from her dead mother, rather. Authorities in the county of Cornwall say that Roy Meadwell not only violated a restraining order taken out by his ex-girlfriend, Kay Winberry, after the couple had broken up, but did so in a truly bizarre fashion. According to the prosecutors, a heartbroken man sent a series of anonymous messages. Did you get it all?
I think you're empty.
Hey, waitress, this drink isn't going to refill itself.
This one had a hole in it. It's gone.
According to prosecutors, the heartbroken man sent a series of anonymous messages to his once significant other, suggesting that they rekindle their relationship. One of those missives attributed to Meadwell is particularly unnerving, as it was reportedly made to look like it came from a nearby tarot shop. Contained in the message was a purported communication from Winberry's late mother, ostensibly imparted to a psychic, which implored her to give her former beau another chance. The quote is, "All you have to do is call him," declared the supposed spirit.
I love the soundtrack behind this one. Tonight. Sending all my
across
love along
the wire.
Being a part ain't no place to start a family. I love that this guy's trying to get the love back, so he's sending a note to this girl's to this girl from her dead mother to say, "You should get back with this boy," as they're singing this song in the background.
All you have to do is call him, declared the supposed spirit in the undoubtedly creepy letter, which the tarot shop denied sending. For his part, Meadwell insists that he was not behind the unsettling letters and contends that they probably came from an acquaintance of the couple who wished to see them get back together, considering that he's currently on trial.
It's just a matchmaker.
And could face a stiff punishment for sending the missives. One wonders what kind of friend would put him in such a precarious position, all in the name of love. Another question worth pondering is, if the paranormal plot proves successful, how Meadwell could have possibly kept from revealing the ruse at some point in the future, since he'd likely want to take credit for pulling it off himself. So there you go.
A lot of Ouija board sessions.
If he'd have just stuck to pulling it off himself, he wouldn't be in this kind of trouble.
That's right. If he would have just... If he would have just used his own pen and his own inkwell, he would have been fine. That takes some talent.
He's lost without you.
God, you just want to sing along.
I know.
But it's got to be violating like all kinds of like.
Yeah, ASCAP. I don't even know if we're supposed to be doing this with music in the background.
Well, if it's in the background, okay. We're not doing it directly, right. So yeah. We're fine.
We've sung more than six notes, though.
Where are we off to next?
To North Carolina.
Where do we have to?
Yeah, well... Only if we want to be caught. A town in North Carolina has become the latest municipality to officially embrace Bigfoot by way of proclamation.
Whoa, I like where this is going.
Yeah, well, and if it
bring it in.
By proclamation, what is he, rolling out the scroll? Hear ye, hear ye, we the town of Devonshire now embrace Sasquatch as one of us.
Bring it in for a hug.
Bring it in, Biggie. Declares the creature to be their official animal, this town did. It's the town of Marion, or the community of Marion, North Carolina.
We got nothing else.
You're now one of us.
It was that or the skunk weasel.
The community of Marion was put on, or it says, was put on the proverbial Sasquatch map last summer when a research group based in the area allegedly spotted the legendary cryptid during an expedition. So they went, "We like you.
You got a pretty mouth.
You're going to be one of us." Although questions remain as to whether or not it was a genuine sighting. That hasn't stopped the town from taking their connection to the...
So wait, this song, while talking about it, suddenly it becomes a romantic story.
It is.
It wasn't supposed to be.
It's the love affair of the community of Marion and Sasquatch.
But suddenly it's like a weirdly romantic bestiality story because of the song.
And here's the sound of Sasquatch crying out for love in the wilderness.
If you just add some banjo, it's perfectly Southern.
Squatch, I'll be forever yours. Faithfully.
Faithfully.
Whoop!
Everybody in the bar just stopped when you did that. They're like, oh.
Hey, who sings this song?
Journey.
They should have been the only ones to sing this song. All right.
Although questions remain as to whether or not it was a genuine sighting, that hasn't stopped the town from taking their connection to the creature even further.
Uh-huh.
In anticipation of a forthcoming Bigfoot festival, officials in Marion have bestowed the title of the town's official animal to the creature, despite conceding that the declaration was a little different. The town's manager mused to the Charlotte Observer, who is to say, what's out there that nobody knows for sure, and there's some smart people who are convinced it's real. Among those individuals is area researcher John Bruner, who is largely credited with having spearheaded the drive to have the creature recognized by the town. Sasquatch being named the official animal of the upstate New York village of Whitehall earlier this summer.
Thank you all for this amazing honor. I couldn't have done it with my friends Chupacabra.
Manamanam.
Manamanam. Not only Satan, but Sasquatch also sounds like Rolf the dog.
It all comes out the yeah. same, Tim.
Wow.
Sorry.
Sasquatch being named the official animal of not only Whitehall earlier this summer inspired Bruner to pitch the concept to Marion officials. The two communities are now joining a growing list of cities and towns that have officially adopted Bigfoot, including Jefferson, Texas, and Evergreen, Alabama, who have declared themselves the Bigfoot capital of their respective states. Marion's announcement may serve to stir up a bit of controversy. That's because they're actually the second community in North Carolina to go all in on Bigfoot. The town of Troy made news last year thanks to a rebranding effort, which saw Sasquatch featured on tourism brochures and at local festivals and as their unofficial mascot. Although Troy did not name their creature as the official animal, that certainly seems to be the case in spirit and leaves one wondering if they will eventually make that move.
Leaves who wondering? Just one?
Just this guy just who wrote the article. Nobody else really wonders.
All right. And where are we off to next in the world of strange and supernatural news?
Well, we're getting down there, but next, if we get through the penis pill ads and the photographs I took of myself earlier. Old debris was found at Detlef Pass.
What?
Yeah.
Huh.
Earlier this week, yeah. So, I shouldn't have left
a
my...
can of Franco-American and
with comic
sliced,
books, yeah.
sliced hot dogs. Yeah.
A tantalizing find was made at Russia's Detlef Pass, and it may shed some light on the mystery of what killed 9 hikers at the site. Located in the Ural Mountains, the remote patch of the wilderness became infamous. Are you getting
Sorry,
it?
I'm out, yeah.
Are you like Def Leppard? Are you getting it?
Armageddon it.
Okay. What killed 9 hikers at the site? Located in the Ural Mountains, a remote patch of wilderness became infamous in paranormal lore after a 1959 incident, which saw a hiking party perish under bizarre circumstances, despite a contemporaneous investigation, I hurt myself on that one, by Russian officials and subsequent decades of study from independent researchers. The cause of the strange event may have has never been fully determined. However, a discovery made by a tourist visiting the area could either constitute a break in the case or yet another glimmer of false hope for those who wish to see the mystery resolved. The unnamed individual reportedly stumbled upon an intriguing piece of metal while visiting the area back in 2008. Remarkably, the find was only recently confirmed after an expedition finally made their way out to the specific location to both see the object for themselves and to bring it back to civilization to be studied. Researchers in Russia say that the mysterious metal fragment, which measures around 3 feet long by 3 feet wide, appears to be some kind of debris from an intercontinental missile. Although it's hard to fathom that a piece of evidence from the Detlef Pass incident could have survived undiscovered in the Ural Mountains for nearly 60 years, the extremely remote nature of the location leaves open the possibility that it very well may have survived, or that it may very well have, rather. Presumably an examination of the metal will allow for it to be identified and in turn place it within some time frame which will reveal whether or not it is connected to the case. Should it be proven that the metal came from a missile being used or tested at the time that the hikers died, it would add considerable strength to the long-standing suspicion that the hikers fell victim to some kind of weapon that was clandestine at the time. So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they found a piece of debris that could or could not have anything to do with it. It may or may not be anything to do with it, but it definitely could or could not be something that was part of the mysterious problem.
Great story.
Yeah,
potentially be part of a missile.
Very non-informative.
Well, it could be part of a missile. Our last story.
Yoo-hoo!
Has to do with Germany. And believe it or not, guys may or may not be prepared for a war with aliens. The first time they wouldn't be prepared for a war.
Wow.
Oh,
just too saying.
Too soon.
One would say that
soon.
World War II, they were not that prepared either.
Well, two fronts.
All right.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Germany has no plan if aliens land. That's the headline. Should aliens...
Hey, Helmut, have we got a plan? Nein, we have no plan.
We have ways of making a plan.
Should aliens ever invade the planet, Germany may turn out to be one of the first places that they conquer, as the country's government recently revealed.
Well, karma's
that
a bitch, isn't it?
It really is. They recently revealed that they have no response plan to place in the event that ETs make contact.
Wait a minute, neither do I.
Oh, that's a good point.
Are you part German?
Makes sense.
Oh.
Son of a gun. Hmm.
According to a German newspaper report, the strange admission was made after a politician named Dieter Janicek.
Now's the time on Sprockets when we dance.
That's right.
But not until we figured out our defense against the aliens.
We will dance them off the planet.
Mr. Alien, would you like to touch my monkey?
Yes, touch him, love him.
He asked the country's economic ministry how the government would respond to such a scenario. He was subsequently informed that there are no plans or protocol on the books for how to respond to ETs. The reason given for this lack of preparedness, that the German government considers the possibility of hearing from aliens to be extremely unlikely according to the current scientific knowledge. And then told him to go build a Volkswagen.
A Volkswagen.
The ministry's response also indicated that there has apparently been no discussion with other nations about the potential for ET contact. Concrete cases that could have been the subject of bilateral or multilateral talks with other states are not known, said the statement. Of course, conspiracy theorists will argue that the German government's response is not altogether surprising and indicative of a global effort by the powers to be, or that be, to keep ET a reality a secret. I'm sorry. I didn't know it was that quiet.
Now they know.
Yeah. Whether that is the case or not, the statement is remarkably similar to one made by the Japanese government earlier this year when they were asked about ET contact. As was the case with Germany, officials in Japan stated, "We have not made any particular consideration of how to respond," and stressed that the existence of UFOs has not been confirmed. With that in mind, we hope that the conspiracy theorists were correct in their assessment, because otherwise, it appears that our planet is dangerously unprepared should ET show up. And, of course, Germany makes the best tanks.
All right, that's it. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have some live Parashare from the Michigan Paracon. We're live on tape at the Sioux on Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
We are back. This is the best of paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness, and we are live at the Sioux, the Michigan Paracon. And joining us right now, we've got a couple of listeners, a couple of people live at the Sioux that are here to share their paranormal encounters in a Parashare live event. Alex, where are you from?
Milford, Michigan.
Milford, Michigan. All right. And you've had a paranormal experience?
Several.
Several. All right. Any scary ones? Really?
No, absolutely.
All right. Lean in a little bit closer to the microphone and tell us.
So,
how old were you?
It was 2 years ago, so 37.
All right.
My mom had gone to Florida. She asked me to watch her house. And so my wife and I went over there, and we all shared, my mom's bed. And I was sleeping with my arm under my head, and I woke up, and there was a hand grab on my forearm from under the bed. Scared me, obviously, but my wife, she woke up and saw a little girl sitting outside of the bed, just by the foot of the bed, wearing a gray dress. Her eyes were all glossed over. She looked like she'd been drowned, from what my wife told me. The interesting thing is that my grandmother and my nephew and my sister, all over the course of 18 years, saw the same little girl
No way. Really?
Yeah. And if you actually Google Maps my mom's address, you'll actually see her silhouette in the sun porch in the front of the house.
Your mom's silhouette?
No, the little girl's silhouette.
And what is that address? So we can Google map that around the world, Alex.
Yeah, she'd kill me.
Well, can you, I'll tell you what, can you Google map and snap it and email it to me at Dave Darkness Radio?
Yeah, definitely.
And we'll cut out all the coordinates, but we'll put up the picture so people can see it. Mm-hmm. How did you feel when you looked at the picture and Google Maps has got the photograph of the ghost in your window?
So I didn't even know about that until I was at dinner with my wife and one of her friends, and she pulled it up and she's like, oh my God, you can see her right there.
That's crazy. And now, have you guys done any research, understand who this little girl might be?
So the house is, Milford's a very old area, and the house was built in like the late 30s.
Okay.
We've tried finding, there's no previous owner that had a daughter, so, but we're right by a river, and like right across the street from a river, and there's been a lot of flooding in that area historically. It used to be a mill town, hence the name Milford.
Right.
And, it's, I mean, that my 4-year-old nephew saw him, or saw her, rather.
Did you ever do any research to see if any little girls drowned in that part of the river by your house?
No, I didn't do any any research about that.
Right.
I mean, that house, you know, much to my mom's dismay, I will say it this way, is that it was a constant stream of paranormal activity.
Okay.
My nephew, when he was 5, he saw a man walking across the living room. That he described as the paper man. When I asked him about it, he held up a sheet of paper to the light and showed that you can see through it.
Oh.
So he didn't have the language to explain that there was a ghost in the house, so he said the paper man. And so, yeah, he saw that at 4 or 5 years old. My grandmother saw the little girl. My other nephew saw the little girl. My sister, when she was pregnant, saw the little girl twice.
Now, did the little girl ever try to communicate or speak, or was she always just kind of sitting there glassy-eyed?
So, most of the time she comes through looking normal, looking just like a little girl wearing an old gray dress. This time, in my mom's room, she came through looking drowned, you know, death state. It got to a point where she kept doing things. My wife was getting poked, I got grabbed. So my wife grabbed salt and put a circle around the bed. And she said that she saw the little girl with her feet right to the edge of the salt circle, just hugging her knees, staring at my wife.
Ooh.
Yeah. So we got a smart ass.
Yeah. So you're not going to spend the night there anymore? Is that the deal?
Oh, no.
No? Done with it?
Done.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, what other kind of experiences have you had?
So when I grew up, my parents were divorced. My dad lived in a house that was built in 1860 in Toledo, an old Victorian. That was interesting. There was, I saw shadow figures. I saw, a man in a hat lean out from a right angle of a wall and just wave at me, and then go back into the wall. We had doors shut. My father heard glass break from the first floor in the middle of the night, went down there, you know, with a gun, and there's no glass broken anywhere. And, doors would shut on their own.
Now, how would he respond about that? Would he try to dismiss it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my dad was very, if I can't see it, it doesn't exist.
Gotcha.
So he said, oh, I must have dreamt it. You know, my stepmom, on the other hand, you know, she was more accepting of what it was. And
listen to the timing. In your head. So that's what he was thinking. It was in his head.
Yeah, exactly.
Good timing. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Now, do you believe in all aspects of the paranormal? UFOs?
Yes.
Cryptids?
Yes.
And spirits?
Yes.
Have you ever had a UFO encounter?
I can't say exactly a UFO encounter. I've seen over on the Zilwaukee Bridge, over towards Gaylord, I saw a light in the sky. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within an hour, I looked back and it was gone. Like, driving back the other way, it was gone. So it rode off, you know, construction lights. Or, you know, low-flying aircraft. I mean,
I'm sure it wasn't just the moon. You know, it does move throughout the night.
Right, yeah. No. you know, that was the one thing that I said that I could call, you know, it was flying, it was unidentified. With regards to, I saw a green flash in the sky one time. Okay. No idea what that was. I talked to Tenny about it. We've had some back and forth about what it could be, but You know, the sky just lit up green in this flash in the middle of December.
Wow.
And, you know, and having conversations like, previous to a Bigfoot sighting, there's oftentimes going to be a green flash in the sky. You know, but I have no idea what that was.
Very cool. Well, Alex, thank you very much for hanging in with us.
Thank you very much.
Sharing your stories. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
We've got some more people lined up here. We're going to turn it over to Kim. I think, do you have her mic lit, or should she get up to this one, Tim?
She can go ahead and she can talk in this one.
All right, Kim, come forward real quick.
Hello.
Hey, Kim, welcome to the show. And where are you from, Kim?
I'm from New Braunfels, Texas.
All right. And is that where this paranormal encounter took place?
No, this was when I was much younger and I lived in California.
All right. Okay, so walk us through it. What happened?
Okay, so I was going over to a friend's house and I was driving. I had a little MGB stick shift at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned left down a one-way street and I pulled up in front of the place that I was going to kind of set it up. It was two rectangle buildings facing each other. They were apartments. And there was a long walkway in between those. And where I pulled up was the gate where you go into the apartments with a large kind of archway with a big swinging kind of spring-loaded gate that you would walk through. So when I pulled up with the passenger side closest to the gate.
Okay.
Okay. I had just pulled up, stopped and turned and looked and saw there was this figure walking down the pathway towards us. I had a girlfriend in the car with me, and we both just stopped. It was about, I would say, 8 to 9 feet tall, and it looked like the Grim Reaper to me, but there was no skull. There was no hands, just kind of blackness where the holes were. The robe was huge. I remember thinking that there was a lot of volumes of material in it, and it was moving in slow-mo. And
so it was very flowy.
Yeah, very flowy. And as it moved toward us, it was just very slow. And I was instantly just horrified, scared. That's probably the scaredest I can remember being. And you know when you get that kind of in a panic, scared situation where it's just seconds, but it feels like it lasts forever. So you have a lot of time to think. So I remember my friend.
It's like Tim's loss of virginity. It's only seconds, but it felt like forever to him.
So my friend yelled for me to go.
Uh-huh.
And I jammed the car into gear, and I put the gas on. And I don't know if you have to know how to drive a stick shift, but if you have the emergency brake on, you know when you press the gas, the car will kind of hunker down. It won't go.
Right.
Okay. It did that. And I had enough time in a split second to look down and think, okay, my brake is not on. And if I make it out of this, people are going to say I have my brake on.
Right.
And then the car slowly kind of edged forward. And then it was like it broke free. And then I just took off. And I remember driving for like 45 minutes before I would stop. I just was so frightened. I drove completely across town. And I picked the... It was at night. So I found a parking lot that had like really lit up. And I pulled in there and just sat. And then I turned to my friend and I'm like, okay, tell me what you saw. And we both basically saw the same thing.
Nice going. Death was just looking for a ride to the bus terminal so it could catch Osama bin Laden, but you blew it off.
Yeah,
I didn't get him a ride. Well played. Well, that's weird. So you guys both discussed seeing what you saw.
Right, right.
And, I mean, how did you sleep that night?
You know, I thought back, because this was a while ago, and I don't remember what I thought out of it. I know that it really frightened me, and I never went back to that place.
Right.
But I don't remember how I slept. I don't know if I just blocked it out because I was so frightened by it. I don't know. I don't remember. But it is probably one of the most frightening experiences I've had in my life. It was, and I've always wondered, was death there for us, or did we just happen to see? Was it death? I don't know. Or did we? Was
maybe he was on vacation?
Or he was there for somebody else?
Right.
And, you know, he thought he just messed with us on the way. I don't know. It was really weird. And I'm not.
Death is kind of a dick. He would play that game with you.
And I wasn't into the. I mean, I wasn't into the paranormal. This is pre-internet. This was a long time ago. So
wow.
Yeah.
Pre-internet.
Yeah.
No kidding. There was a time when the internet did not exist.
I just dated myself. Yes.
So, was that your first real paranormal encounter?
Yeah, that was.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And have you had continued activity?
I did later on in my adult life. I did live in a house that I believed to be haunted. at one time, yeah.
Okay, why?
It was odd because it was a new build. It was new construction. So it didn't make sense to me that there would be anything abnormal about it. But it always had kind of a sinister feeling about it. We never slept well there. My mom was visiting, and I was explaining to her how I didn't feel good about the house. And while I was sitting and explaining to her in the living room, the kitchen sink came on. The TV came on, the VCR came on, sucked in a tape. See a VCR, I just dated myself again. And a lamp in the corner.
Jurassic Park?
I know, right?
No internet and VCRs?
Da, 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 yeah. Da, but all da. These things happen simultaneously when I'm telling her that right. I think the house is haunted. And then this would happen if you were walking out of the house or walking into the house. The first time it happened to me, I was walking into the house. I was carrying groceries. I shut the door behind me, and it sounded instantly, as soon as the door shut, it sounded like somebody your size or my husband's size was running as fast as they could and hit the door behind me.
Wait a minute, no. My size or your husband's
well,
size.
You know.
I'm taller and fatter than your husband, so it's definitely between this okay. size and that size. I'm with you.
Grown man size.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And you would, you know, I instantly opened the door because I thought I had shut it on somebody and there would be no one there.
Right.
But it could happen to you walking in or out.
Hmm.
I'm trying to think. I think that was it, probably. But that would happen a lot. We would find arrowheads, things like that, in the flower beds. But I don't know. It just was not, it wasn't a good place. Oh, and then there was the pillow. The pillow, one time I was cleaning. Oh, I think my husband wants to tell you that part of it.
He's going
to
tell us
the story? Yeah, I think he's going to tell you the pillow story, yeah.
All right. So do you have any other tales you wanted to share with us?
I don't. That's it.
All right. We're back and we're live at the Sioux here in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. This is the 9th annual Michigan Paracon, and we're doing a live parashare right here on the spot. Joining me now, we just talked with Kim. Now her husband, Marty, is sitting in with us. Do you prefer Marty or Martin?
Marty's fine.
Marty's fine. All right, Marty. So you've got a story for us.
Yeah.
Now, lean in a little closer so we can hear you. I know you're soft-spoken. So tell us the pillow story.
Yeah, well, you know, Kim and I purchased or had this house built, and I think she mentioned a little bit about what she's gone through. But I really didn't believe what she was telling me, kind of, you know, thought it was the wind or saw the electricity or, you know, bad VCR. So I never really believed what she was telling me. Yeah.
Typical husband, right?
Yeah.
I just thought she was crazy,
yeah,
Dave.
Yeah. And so...
So you didn't really have a belief in the paranormal before?
No, not at all. No.
Okay.
Yeah. And one day I was watching football, and I was in our bedroom, and I have a bad neck, so I have really flat pillows. And they work pretty good for me. So I was watching TV, watching football. I think the Vikings, I think they're winning. And
wow, that is paranormal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of unusual.
You're right.
Yeah. So... ended up rolling the pillow up and putting it up behind my neck. And at one point, I needed to go and use the bathroom. So got up, went to the bathroom, wasn't gone more than a couple minutes. Came back, and the pillow, it was a flat, flat pillow, was sticking straight up in the middle of my bed. And I thought...
No, wait a minute. So it's like standing on end?
On the short end. Yeah.
On the short end?
Yeah, the short end of the pillow.
Oh, okay, so it's like, it's not standing up long side, right?
Yeah.
It's sideways.
No, no, no.
But it's standing straight up?
No, long side.
Okay, oh, so, all right, I
yeah,
got you. All
yeah,
right. And I'm four Bloody Marys in, Marty.
No, that's okay, me. I understand.
Okay.
Yeah, and so...
this is like geometry I'm going through
yeah,
over here.
Yeah, and then the four-cornered on the...
Right.
Now, so I'm thinking, so I'm kind of sitting there thinking, trying to logically figure out how that could have happened. So
right.
I'm thinking, okay, maybe the pillow rolled over three times down the bed and then kind of shot itself up.
Sure, that made sense to you, Marty.
Yeah, it did. And so I'm thinking, yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, your wife's nuts. I see now.
So then I'm like, this is crazy. And so I ended up actually taking pictures of it because I was like, no one's going to believe me. And so I called my wife. She looked at it, and she's like, yeah, this is what I was telling you. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to take pictures, and I'm going to download it to my computer because, you know, it's never going to get lost that way. And this is like in 1997, so, you know, it got lost eventually. But,
sure.
You know, but, yeah, so it was kind of weird. And finally, you know, after about 3-4 minutes, I went and pushed the pillow, and it fell down on its own. But, I mean, it was sticking straight up. So
not on its own, Marty. You pushed it.
Well, I pushed it.
You just
it,
hurt
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You bullied your pillow.
Okay. Yeah.
But when you gave it a tap, it fell over.
It fell right over, yeah.
All right.
And so that was really the thing that kind of... So I really, like Kim said, we never really felt... I never really slept really well in that house. I mean, I always woke up maybe every couple hours type of thing. And I've never, you know, I sleep fine now, you know, and I have been before then and after that. So I don't know what it was. Something was with that house, though.
So did you, okay, so that opened you up to the idea that maybe there is something to what your wife has been telling you.
Yeah, yeah. And up to that point, you know, really, we never really paid much attention to the paranormal. We never, you know, Kim couldn't see, she couldn't even see a movie that was, you know, halfway
scary.
Yeah, exactly. And after that, it was almost like we kind of started really looking into it and saying, hey, is there more to it? So and that's kind of really kind of how it got us started into, you know, listening to various, you know, your radio station and various other types of paranormal information, trying to just kind of learn more about it.
And you've been with us pretty much since the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Marty's one of the original listeners, Tim.
Yeah.
Holy
from
cow.
Back in '06.
Wow.
When we launched.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. I remember telling Kim, I don't know what publication I was looking at, but I remember seeing y'all's advertisement, black and white, you and Tim.
It was either in Fate Magazine or Taps Paramag, probably.
It was Taps and Paramag,
there,
yeah.
Yep, there
yeah.
you go.
And from that point on, we've been listening to you guys. Just great stuff.
Well, thank you. Now, have you had any other paranormal experiences besides the Great Pillow Uprising?
No.
No? But you're still open to the idea.
Oh, yeah, concepts. Definitely. No, okay. It's... definitely, we and a lot of it's just based off of the information that we kind of learned since then.
Sure.
But no, it's there's
but
something.
But now that you've learned a lot and you look back at your life, do you notice that there are other things that happened that you might have easily brushed away as shenanigans, but now you think really may have been paranormal?
Oh, yeah. And you know, I came from a family that really kind of believed in it anyways. I know my parents had talked to me about, you know, how they had seen something back when they were... traveling one time, they saw something cross the street, and basically a guy had gotten hit by a diesel truck the week before, and by a brewery, and they were traveling about 3 a.m. They were traveling down that same road, and they saw the something walk by, and my dad actually stopped the car, and I remember them telling me that story, you know, when I was a little kid, but you know, I really never took much, you know, thought much about it, but. So it wasn't. I wasn't in a household that kind of looked down or frowned upon to that type of information.
Very cool. Well, yeah. Thank you both for stopping by.
Sure.
And we'll look forward to seeing you guys again at other conferences. It's great catching up. But you guys went on our England trip with us.
Yeah, man, that was great.
Our first England trip, and had a great time. So thank you for stopping in and spending a little time here. See, this is what I love about doing these conferences, Tim. And we've got Devin who's going to join us. Jeff Belanger will be coming back in a few moments to share some stories with us as well. We are at the 9th annual Michigan Paracon in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. And always have a great time here. We had a great crowd turnout on Thursday night for our talk.
Yeah.
And that's a kickoff night. And there were several hundred people in attendance that came to our talk and had a great time. So for all of you new listeners, welcome to the show. Thank you for tuning in and checking us out. It's been great to have you here. Now joining us up on the stool of Destiny, Tim.
We have Devin.
Devin doesn't want us to give her last name because she's single and attractive and doesn't want all the weird freaks from our show following her.
I don't
too
blame
closely.
Her. I wouldn't.
I appreciate that,
yeah.
Dave.
Yeah, not a problem, Deb. All right, so let's see. Now, you've got a couple of experiences, and you've been around us now for, what, about six years?
Yeah.
And you've been to some of the live events.
Mm-hmm.
And have you had paranormal experiences throughout your life?
I have, actually.
How old were you when they started?
The first one I remember is when I was about 2 years old.
So, like 12, 13 years ago?
We'll go with that.
Okay.
yeah, I remember I got up, of course, as a toddler, 2 years old, and I went to my parents' room to wake up my mom. And when I walked into the room like I normally do, I looked up, and above their bed over the headboard, there was like one large shadow. And if you know what the puffin birds look like,
yeah,
it kind of looked like the profile of that with three little ones off to the side. And they were kind of like shaking back and forth. And I remember kind of looking around, seeing if there was anything that could have caused such a shadow. And I've never seen them before, and I never saw them again. But my instinct was just absolute fear, and I almost turned to run, but the only thing I could do was just run up and wake up my mom as fast as I could, and that's the first thing I really remember.
So you were terrified of puffin bird shadows.
Apparently. Whoa, I love them now, but...
Skatey kids. Nothing worse than those stupid little puffins all puffed out and shaking in your windowsill.
When you're 2 years old,
right,
you know.
I understand. All right, and what about some of your other experiences? Now, have you had, I know that was scary because you were two.
Right.
But have you had any other experiences that really left you unnerved?
If you want to continue on, when I was about five, I had a closet with a dimmer light.
Okay.
And I remember that was the first one that was really like a voice, because my parents walked out of my room after telling me goodnight, and it was their anniversary. So I remember calling out to my mom, happy anniversary. And all of a sudden, from the closet, I hear in a deep growling voice, shut up, and the light just, like, flickered with the voice.
No.
Yeah.
So it was like an equalizer on a stereo.
Right.
So you heard, shut up, and
exactly.
The lights flickered like that.
Yeah, and so I was like,
I didn't
yeah,
mean
love
to yell
you,
like
Mom,
that.
And it did it again. And so I was absolutely scared of that closet
no
after that
way.
Point. Yeah.
So did you tell your parents?
I know I told them later. I don't know if I actually told them at that time.
You were brave. How old were you? Five?
I was probably... four or five, yeah.
Jeez, that gave me a lot of credit. Okay, so even with that, that kept you more interested in the paranormal?
I love a good mystery.
I guess.
So the whole mystery of what is it, what's going on, that's just what draws me and has me attracted to the whole ghost, paranormal, UFO, everything. But the most recent one that was really more on the darker side that really got me unnerved was about 2 years ago, and... I heard a noise at the end of the bed that woke me up.
Uh-huh.
And you know that pressure, like when someone's sort of sitting on the bed by you?
Do I? Tim does it all the time.
Well, as I started waking up, I felt something crawling up my bed, but it felt like it was straddling me, like one arm and one knee on each side of me, slowly walking up. Of course, I've been to your lectures. I've heard your show. I know sleep paralysis. So in
right.
my mind, I'm telling myself, you know, just wake up. It's nothing. It's no big deal. But the thing is, I know that you say sleep paralysis mostly happens when you're sleeping on your back.
Right.
And I was on my side. And also, I remember gripping my sheet, so I was able to use my hands. And as it got closer, I hear the breathing turn more into a snarl, and I start feeling the hot breath on my face as it got closer. So...
jeez!
Yeah. So I know that fear can get it to sort of have control over you, so I just did not open my eyes. I didn't want to see it, because I knew that would send my fear out of control. So as it got closer and I felt that breath on my face, I just started seeing a white protective light around me. I just said in my head, you know, you have no power over me. You have no power here. Be gone. I'm not scared of you. Just go. And eventually it left. And I just started thinking, oh, shoot, my parents are in the next room. Like, I don't want it just thinking you don't have any power over me. So I started, like, protecting the entire house. You have no power over anyone here. And a few days went by. It still was sort of unnerving. Slowly I forget about it. Almost a year later, all of a sudden I start remembering it for no reason, and I start thinking, there was one night I almost didn't turn off my TV because I just did not want to be in the dark, and I couldn't figure out why. The next night, I woke up, and again, it was there, only it was pacing back and forth across me this time. And so again,
on your bed.
On my bed, yeah.
Something's walking back and forth on your bed.
Across my chest.
Now, does it feel like 2 feet, or does it feel like paws or something, like an animal might be doing it?
I couldn't really say that. I just know the pressure of the
okay.
feeling of just...
sure.
And I could feel the pressure going from left to right to left to right. And so, again, I was just, you know, gripping my sheets as tight as I could and telling, you know, protecting myself with white light and saying, you have no power. And this time, I felt it go back over to my right and go off my bed. And as it was leaving to my right, I heard the chair over by my computer shift, which was just
like
odd to me.
Like it
bumped it on its way out.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's very weird and cool. So
yeah.
why do you think these things, and especially these kind of weird, darker voices, why do you think they're so attracted to you, especially knowing that you know how to kind of call on the white light and energy? Or
right,
do you think it's because you do that they're trying to break you down?
Maybe. It could be a breakdown thing. I don't know. And I know I've been stressed, or in that time I was going through a lot of stressful things, so it could have just been trying to attack my weakness at the moment. But I wasn't going to let it get me.
Atta girl. Very cool. Well, Devin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For sharing some stories with us. You're welcome to hang in. Jeff Belanger's back with us now.
Hey again.
All right, Jeff. We've had a chance. We're at a conference. We've been
yes.
talking about people's personal experiences with the paranormal. And you and I, we were just discussing it today. We did events for about 5 years together.
Yeah.
Right? Starting in about 2008 to 2012. I mean, our events, Darkness Radio.
Yeah. Yep.
But we've been at events since 2008 till today. So,
today, yeah.
Yeah, we're about 11 years in,
yep.
or 10 years in now, hanging out and doing these events. You know, one of the things people always ask me is, how can you, you know, you're not getting any activity when there's this many people at an event? And you and I were even skeptical of that.
Yeah.
But we've had some really weird things happen throughout the time.
One of the things that's interesting to me is that I noticed that, and I've said for a long time, you can't take living humans out of the paranormal equation, right? The ghosts don't exist in a vacuum. And so we've done these things where sometimes we are stuck in one location for the night and different groups move through. And one group comes in and stuff's like, there's knocking sounds, people are seeing things,
right.
people are like, you know, hearing things, and it's just off the charts. And you're like, this is amazing. And the next group comes in and you're like, you guys, you're not going to believe this. Like, get ready, shut the lights off, here we go. And it's flat.
Right.
And it's, I believe it's the energy of the people in the room. It's the ingredients to the stew, right?
But isn't it weird? Because you'd think that the next group coming in, when we're all amped up and we're telling them what's been happening, you would think that would almost be get, because now their attitudes, intention, and fear, or whatever you want to call it, would be amped up as well. But it's just like it goes the opposite direction.
Everything's different, right?
Right.
It's just every situation is different. And so, I think that, but these things do happen. And what, when something goes down, my first impulse is, of course, to try to explain it, you know, to like look and feel, okay, there was a knock on the wall, can we explain it? And you live for those moments when you're pretty thorough. And we always speak up and we're like, all right, it was this or was that. But when you can't, when you're like, I got nothing, that's cool, right? Like,
yeah.
I can't promise it's paranormal, but I can promise I couldn't figure it out.
Now, that reminds me of one of my favorite stories. And we were talking about this off air. Bob Murch, who is the Ouija board historian,
yes.
right? The talking board historian.
Yep.
You had talked me into, you got to have him come to one of your events, Dave.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he knows the history of Ouija board. It's time we educate people so that they don't walk in this constant state of fear. So let's bring him in. So we agreed to bring Bob in. And I talked to Bob on the air and talked to him in person. And, you know, he loves the paranormal. He loves these kind of deals, but he's not a big believer.
No.
He doesn't
not
believe that guy. Anything paranormal is happening with a Ouija board. That's
no.
why he's not fearful and has 2 million at his house.
Right.
Right? So he comes to the Mansfield Reformatory with us. And we were split off getting ready to do an investigation. The end of the night is coming. And Bob and I are hanging out.
Yeah.
And we're waiting for you. So we go hide behind a sign.
Yeah,
we're waiting to scare you guys.
So I'm with a group. And all of a sudden I hear... and like everyone's like, shut up. Oh, my God. Like this is, and then I'm like, wait. That smells like Schrader.
Right. right.
So I'm like, I know what that is, folks. Relax. And so we're in a stairwell, and you were like yelling down the stairwell, down the stairwell. And so I trot up the stairs. I'm like, guys, it's Schrader messing with us. Nothing to be afraid of. And as I get to the top of the stairs, Merch's face is just like, zoinks, right? So something just went down in the time it took me to come up those stairs.
No. What had happened was we were waiting to scare you.
Yeah.
And we thought we heard you coming around at one point, and you weren't there. And then Bob kind of gave me the look like, what the hell was that? And then as we're standing behind this thing, from behind us, we hear the door creak and footsteps on the concrete. And Bob turns around real slowly and looks, and then looks at me, and he's like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And it walked right up behind us, and he goes, get out of here. This isn't real. What just happened? And then I heard you guys, and I go, I got to go get Jeff. And I ran over to scare you at that point. But it was leading up, waiting to freak you out. This thing walked up behind us. And Bob's response was perfect.
Oh,
man,
it was
I
so
legit,
because I saw it. Like, 2 seconds after it happened, I see his face, and he's just like, you mean this is all real? Right? Like, are you kidding me? And it was so priceless. He's like, I just, and the door, and the steps, and it was right there. And, oh, my God. You know, and I was just like, dude, that's amazing. And I missed it by, like, 8 seconds.
Yeah.
And, but no, that place is off the charts. You know,
yeah.
like that's just one of those buildings where you walk in, and I've said before, I don't consider myself psychic or sensitive, but once in a while, you're in a place so powerful that you just go, whoa, this is heavy. Like something happened here.
While we're at Mansfield and talking about that, we were there with the Ghost Adventures crew.
Yep.
And we were doing an event there. And here's what gets kind of bizarre, right? So I've got Mark and Debbie Constantino and Aaron Goodwin down in the cell block where it's, what's it called again? Solitary.
Yep.
They're down in Solitary. So they always turn their phones off or mute them, right? So they've got their stuff going. And Aaron breaks off, and he's with another little group down in the basement, and his phone starts vibrating. And he looks at it, and it's a call from Mark Constantino. So he swipes to hang it up, puts it back in his pocket, and powers off his phone. And he starts talking, and all of a sudden his phone starts vibrating in his pocket again. He reaches back and pulls it up, and it's Mark Constantino's phone. He's like, what the hell, Mark? I'm trying to do this, right? So he hangs up again and powers off his phone, powers it off, sticks it back in his pocket. A few minutes later, it lights up again, and it's Mark Constantino. Huh. So at the end of the ghost hunt, here's the weird thing. I got a call from one of the guests that were staying at the hotel that night. So while we're over at Mansfield with the first group, the other group's here. They go, weird stuff's going on here, man. All the lights went down. Alarm started going. Then they came back up. Then they went down again. And I said, what time was this? So they tell me. At the end of the ghost hunt, they come up, and they're standing in front of me, Mark and Debbie and Aaron Goodwin. And he goes, yo, bro, he goes, you kept calling me, and I'm trying to do the ghost hunt. Mark goes, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, during the ghost hunt, you kept calling me. What did you need? And he goes, I wasn't calling you. My phone was back at the hotel. Yeah. It wasn't working right, so I left it at the hotel. And he goes, no, bro, your phone was calling me. Look. And he shows him the missed calls.
Yeah.
And Mark's jaw hits the ground. I go, what time is that? So he looks. And on the piece of paper I've got jotted, what time all this hell broke loose at the hotel, it's at the exact same time Mark's phone is calling.
So weird, isn't it?
And there's nobody in their room.
Yeah, right.
So that was one of those kind of, I wish it was a bigger, grander scale that everybody saw.
Right.
But that was really unnerving.
Yeah, yeah.
Very kind of cool moment at these deals.
Those places are just something. You know, you walk through those old halls, and I remember walking through the cell blocks, and it's dark because we have the lights out. But the cells themselves, when you're on the ground floor, and there's like six stories of cages,
right.
And where we kept not the greatest of humanity, right?
Right.
And the cages themselves, like inside, is darker than dark.
Yes.
And you're walking like 3 feet from an open cell door, and suddenly you just get this sense of like, at least we move like 5-6 feet away. You just start, right. Like something that's just ready to come out of there. And call it your imagination, call it whatever, but it's a powerful experience.
I know we're running out of time here, but since we're talking jails...
I might almost be up for karaoke.
Well, hold on. We got to tell our final story here.
Okay.
When you and I, speaking of jails, we went to... We were in Virginia City.
Oh, yeah.
And we were doing... You and I were tag-teamed together in the jail.
Wait a minute.
Right.
You're missing some backstory.
Well.
So earlier that day, there was a wedding. That started at noon.
Yes.
That we partook in.
And there was an open bar.
An open bar. Right. And so we had 37 drinks each.
And in
so,
an hour and a half, I think it was.
Yeah, the open bar was for like 12 minutes. And right. We're like, I can... All right. So we're like, let's try to like break a land speed record here. So anyway, so we did that. And then later we took a nap, and then we had dinner, and then we had to do like an 8-hour ghost hunt.
Right.
Which is a little long.
A lot of long.
It was like 8 to 4.
Right.
so we're at the jail in the Virginia City, and
8 o'clock at night till 4 in the morning.
Right, and it all's going well for most of that. Yeah,
you know, some people are getting some EVP and things are going on. But
cool,
you know, Jeff and I, we also have to kind of talk people down when they start overreacting to nothing, and you know, we're debunking photographs for them and having some fun. Well, finally, it's like the last 45 minutes to hour of the night.
Right.
And Jeff and I go, and we're literally sitting on the floor because your legs just ache after 8 hours standing on these cold
cement
floors.
Right.
And we're both sitting there, and there's people going in and out of the cells. But now everybody's on the lower level, and all of a sudden we see these figures come out of one cell and walk and go into another.
Yeah, but I think I saw it first, and I'm like, dude, look up there. Do you see that? There's this dark shadow that's moving from, like, cell to the... Then there's, like, a white wall, and then it goes over to the next cell. And,
right.
And I'm like, yeah, do you see that, Dave? And he says...
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. And then I go... And you said, well, should we go tell everybody? And I'm like... Nah, I'm too tired.
It's just like,
and we were like, so matter of fact about it.
Yeah, it's cool.
But we were so like matter of fact about this because we've been there for 8 hours now, but we got to see this really kind of fascinating moment.
Yeah,
and at one point you'd think, okay, well, we're exhausted, we're recovering from a lot of drinks earlier in the day, right? So there's a lot of things at play in here, but the fact that we both saw it simultaneously, And then there was like this non-reaction for both of us.
Right.
We're both like, yeah, that's cool.
I'd really rather go to bed.
So we love doing these events. You can see us all over. And I've got a bunch of cool stuff coming up. Check out darknessradio.com. Click on the events tab to see what's coming up next. And I know we're going to be going to Romania soon. I'm going to be out at the Shooting Star Casino event. I'm going to be out at the
North Star Casino.
North
we'll
Star
be there.
In Green Bay.
Yeah, we'll both be there.
There's another one coming up, and I'm sorry, it's not in my head right now. It's in Tahoe, up by Tahoe somewhere. but it's all on our page. Just go to darknessradio.com, click on the events tab, and get a chance to come on out there and see me, see Tim, see Jeff as we travel around the world and have these great experiences. Thank you to all of the great guests and listeners. We're out of time. And Tim, again, fantastic. We will be again live tomorrow here at the Sioux for another episode of the best in paranormal talk radio. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. That's Jeff Belanger. You've been listening to Beyond the Darkness.